Testing with the microphone on top of the file on maximum gain. 1, 2, 3, 4. Maximum gain. Now hand holding the microphone at a distance of about 6 inches and reducing the gain to a setting about 4 or 5, about 5, 5.5. 5.5 at a distance of about 5 inches. End of test. Microphone testing on the TK-145. 145. Testing at a distance of about 6 inches from the mouth using a moving microphone.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And www.resonancefm.com on the net. This program repeats on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. and can also be heard from my website www.radio.williamenglish.com.
Very high gain available on the left hand channel and none on the right.
.com.
Back on the phono, a weak input to the right, nothing on the left.
In autumn 19...
On apparently the left-hand channel, with no means of changing to the right-hand channel. Now trying...
In autumn 1957, Captain Frank Morris Henry Nacom Urquhart Sedon, Royal Signals retired... Travelled to Rome via Hildesheim in Germany, driving a Rolls-Royce, which in 1959 was already an antique and averaged something like 6 miles to the gallon. In the back of this behemoth of the road, Morris had installed a working television set, in spite of never watching television himself. He was accompanied by his aunt, Elsa Dyker. Morris's sister, Cecilia, had divorced her first husband, Bob Foley, and had just split up with her new Italian partner. She was living in Rome, and an endless diary of cocktail parties and socialising amongst minor and major aristocrats had encouraged her towards total inebriation. Morris spent several weeks with Cecilia, and as a result wrote the following typewritten text to a prospective sanatorium in 1958, soon after returning to England. Ideally, the text would have been read by Morris, but as he died in March of this year, that is no longer possible. The text makes reference to tape recordings Morris made at the time, which have yet to surface. Well, last week I finished at the point that Morris reached in his journal, translated from the Italian. And this takes us up to the 1st of January 1958, and it's from there that the journal continues. And a brief recap of the end of last week's journal, where Morris says, "At this point we come to the end of the translation from the Italian of the original document compiled by me for the benefit of the Italian doctors who were dealing with my sister's case. And from now on, we go over to the diary of 1958. It must, however, be said that all the entries for January 1958 referring to drunkenness were struck out by my sister in ball pen in order to obliterate any record of her extraordinary behaviour. This was done by my sister on or about the 9th of January 1958, and I had to rely on my memory in reinserting the entries from that date for the preceding days of January. So now it goes on. The 1st of January 1958, 10:30 hours. I went with Herta, Freifrau von Diergart, and with her guest, the Duchess of Saxon-Meiningen, on a motor tour in Herta Diergaard's car, driven by her chauffeur to Rocca di Papa. We had tea together afterwards at Bavington's English Tea Room. On returning to my sister's flat at 20:50 hours, I encountered the female porter's husband, who made rather rude remarks to me in asking that my sister's Austin motor car be moved.
7 or 8 inches from the mouth on TK145.
To a distance on about 6 inches from the mouth on 3-4.
And now testing once more on the microphone on channel 3-4 on the TK145. Now putting the microphone down at a distance of about 4 feet, channel 3-4, changing over.
This was typical and indicative of the state of relationship between my sister and her maid on the one hand, and the female porter and her husband on the other. Tuesday, the 2nd of January, 11:30 hours, I went to Dr. Angelotti to discuss once more the possibilities of my sister taking a cure in a clinic for her condition. At 13:45 hours, my sister was drunk once more. At 19:15 hours, we attended a cocktail party given by Baroness Diergaard in her flat. Friday, the 3rd of January, 1500 hours. I went to visit Baroness Diergaard and discussed with her the terrible problem of my sister's condition. She stated from experience of her previous husband that she was convinced that my sister was schizophrenic and alcoholic, and that it was most important that she should take treatment in a clinic. At 20:00 hours, while still out in the city on my way back from Baroness Diergaard, I rang up my sister from a public telephone, and it was plain to me from her voice over the telephone that she was drunk. At 20:20 hours, I entered her flat. I found the place in uproar. My sister was standing at one end of the main hallway with a chair raised above her head, which she was in the process of hurling at her maid Mimma and Mimma's daughter Bertia, who were both at the other end of the corridor. Both of these were screaming out blue murder and threatening to go for the police immediately. There was smashed furniture lying about the hall. This was the worst night yet. I pounced upon my sister and forcibly carried her to her bedroom and locked her in order to protect the servants and to prevent her doing further damage. Unfortunately, her room has a French window connecting by means of a short flight of steps with her garden. So she went out through her French window into the garden and screamed there wildly, trying to get into my bedroom through my locked French window and through the wooden roller blind which I lowered to protect the window. This wild violence continued until midnight. I let my sister out of her room long before this time, hoping that her tantrums would have died down, but this was not to be. My sister remained drunk thereafter until at least 01:40 hours on the 4th of January. The 4th of January. At 10 o'clock hours, I went and visited Dr. Fiume, who lives at Via Rodolfo Lanciani 10, flat 4, near the Via Nomentana. He has a special clinic for nervous illnesses in which he treats alcoholics, amongst others. This is known as the Villa Electra, at number 153 Via Dalle Camiluccia. The telephone number is Rome 340581 and his private telephone number is 863942. The clinic is located on the hill known as Monte Mario. Dr. Fiume came with me to talk to my sister, endeavouring in vain to persuade her to take up residence in his clinic for some weeks in order to undergo treatment. My sister made numerous glib promises of mending her ways, none of which she kept, and Dr. Fiume went later that day. My sister was drunk again. Sunday the 5th of January, 11 o'clock hours. My sister and I went to a drag type of fox hunt held on the country estate, La Bufalato, belonging to my sister's ex-lover, Commandatore Zingoni, with whom she was still supposed to be on friendly terms. We went in my car and we took Baroness Diergaardt with us. At 1900 hours, we went to a cocktail party given by an American, Charles Tuffrey, in his flat, and at 2130 hours, I went alone to a further party given by Signorina Resi Olivieri, a fork supper. Monday, the 6th of January, I went to tea with Marchese Giulio Marconi at 1630 hours, and at 2100 hours to supper with Countess Zogheb at Via Sansodora, 8. My sister did not attend either of these functions. Tuesday the 7th of January, 1430 hours. I went to the country estate La Bufalato, about 15 miles outside Rome, in order to speak confidentially with Commendatore Luciano Zingoni, who asked me previously to stay in Rome as long as possible to look after my sister, whom he knew to be in no fit condition to be left on her own. I told him that I regretted that nothing I did for her was accepted. On the contrary, she violently rejected any attempt on my part to halt the very unsatisfactory pattern of her life. I pointed out that I had work to do in England, and much as I regretted it, I would have shortly to leave for England, and I could do nothing further for my sister, at least for that time. By 1600 hours, my sister had consumed 1.5 litres of wine.
With a much shorter helicopter journey to and from the Hornet, but it isn't going to help the astronauts, interestingly enough, because the captain of the Hornet has just announced that although he'll have 250 miles
by 1700, she was noticeably drunk. At 1900 hours, she was offended because I had gone to see Luciano Zingoni without telling her. 20:30 hours, my sister and I went to dinner at the restaurant Piccolo Budapest, together with Irene Wasilchioff, the Duchess of Saxon-Meiningen, Baroness Diergaardt, and the Comte Esterhazy. My sister became drunk, and I eventually got to bed at 01:35 hours on the 8th of January.
Comes down vertically, swings round by means of aerodynamic lift by turning the comb round a little bit.
The 8th of January, pretty well horizontal. 11 o'clock, my sister took her dogs for a walk.
At this point,
the British Embassy rang up in order to give me an invitation from the British Ambassador, Sir Ashley Clark, to attend a musical evening at the British Embassy on the 16th. I was out when the call came through. During lunch, a scene took place between my sister and myself, once more concerning my visit to Luciano Zingoni on the 7th of January. My sister became drunk and sulked. At 18:15 hours, Luciano Zingoni paid my sister and I a visit. In the evening, I went to dinner with Baroness Diergaardt in her flat.
The position of touchdown has been changed because of a thunderstorm, and it's about 250 miles nearer to Hawaii. Of course, the
9th of January, I lunched with Baroness Diergaardt and with the Duchess of Saxon-Meiningen at a rosticceria in the Corso. Maybe that's a rosticceria in the Corso. The 10th of January, I went to lunch with Prince Ruspoli and we performed electrical experiments. I returned to my sister's flat at 18:30 hours and took a belated siesta from 1900 hours until 2030 hours. I was awakened by my sister for dinner and found her to be drunk. She remained in this condition until 23:15 when she switched off the television and went to her room. She was in a very cunning frame of mind and was eavesdropping on the maid and myself, who were discussing the problems associated with her drinking. She went to bed peacefully but drunk. She consumed half a bottle of whiskey during the evening and I heard a bottle clink at 23:30 in her room. Saturday the 11th of January. In the morning, I discovered that my sister had torn out all the pages from the diary for 1957, from September to December inclusive, covering all the drunken and sober episodes in this period. She evidently hoped by so doing that she had destroyed all record of her strange doings. In fact, this was not the case, because unbeknown to her, on the 31st of December 1957, I had prepared a long transcript in Italian of all her strange doings. From September up to and inclusive of the 31st of December. It is from this Italian transcript that I have been able to compile the first portion of this document. On discovering that my sister had torn out these pages and that she had burnt them, her maid gave me this information, which she subsequently admitted was true. I became very angry and promptly announced that I was going to leave Rome that day and go to England, as it was quite apparent that my remaining in Rome was achieving no useful purpose. I packed my bag into the Rolls-Royce. I went to see Dr. Fume, from whom I collected the Italian transcript of my sister's doings, which I had previously deposited in safekeeping with him. I also notified the following friends of my imminent departure and told them briefly the reasons. Baroness Diergaard, Princip Rospoli, Irene Wasilkiov, and Monsignore Alan Clark. My sister became drunk with effect from 1100 hours. My sister became drunk with effect from 1100 hours and cried bitterly for the rest of that day, imploring me to remain in Rome. But I refused to do so. I wrote one or two letters to friends in Germany and England, notifying them of my impending arrival. And at 2000 hours, I left my sister's flat and Rome in my car on my way back to England. My sister was drunk at the time of my departure, just as she had been at the time of my arrival in September 1957. She was incapable of seeing me off or of saying goodbye. She cried as I left. And that...
And a four-tier road.
It was a very, very dull,
enormous.
It sounded like
the road takes.
Listening to fireworks about six blocks away from your local...
That's the end of Morris's account of his visit to his sister in Rome from 1957 to 1958. Then when he got back to England, he referred or wrote to St. Bernard's Hospital, Southall, Middlesex, on behalf of his sister. And the next section that I read from is the what's called the inquiry or history form of St. Bernard's Hospital, Southall, Middlesex, dated February 1960.
The first men to ever walk on the moon
until
again.
Carry on built the
that just
house,
makes
you know,
the whole job out here seem a little bit more incredible.
And it has
the
become
gentlemen we are about to welcome back to
the last century,
where they
one
have
the
been and what they have done.
The world.
Why do people from Europe
we are
take that
looking for a spacecraft which has got to be at about
to go there?
Oh, in the low 20,000 feet.
When you hear, as I did before I was invited,
it's drogue chute deployment having already taken place. These are small chutes about 16 feet in diameter. Every chute,
then
of the
later ones
series
of
parachutes that comes out, there are eight of them. Every chute comes out in a reefed or partly open condition. The reason should be obvious. You have something moving this fast, try and open a chute fully the first time out.
St. Bernard's Hospital, Southall, Middlesex, Inquiry History Form. Mrs. Cecilia Margareta and Yolande Foley, the 8th February 1960. The name and relationship of informant, Captain Maurice Seddon, Royal Signals retired. Datchet Cottage, Datchet, Buckinghamshire. Section 1, Patient's Family, English. Mother, German. Father, Methodist, non-practicing. Mother, Roman Catholic, non-practicing. Father, approximately 24 years. Mother, approximately 32 years, believed. It's very difficult to read parts of this form. Question, parents. Something about a question about the parents, how they deceased. One was a stroke. Latterly, alcoholic. Company director, formerly wealthy, latterly bankrupt. Mother, housewife, formerly concert pianist.
In big, bold, black numbers, about 3 feet high, we can say, Chuck, 53. And that's piloted by Lieutenant Commander Clebo.
Brother John Frederick Henry, deceased 1951, aged 33 years, died of chronic Bright's disease and resultant uremia, was mentally retarded, apparently, and unable to take any lasting employment. Born circa 1919. Other brother, Maurice Frank Urquhart Nacom, the writer of this document, born May the 22nd, 1926. Patient's brother, J. Frederick. Patient's maternal grandfather, Johannes Nacom, died in the mental hospital in Hildesheim, North Germany, near Hanover, of softening of the brain. The writer knows of no cases of B, C, D, or E. A tendency to Bright's disease is present in the family. In addition to the patient's mother, a brother Frederick, our mother's brother, Wunibald Nacom of Hildesheim, was a chronic sufferer from this disease, from which he died in Egypt, where he had been sent for health reasons in the 1910s. The patient's mother and father both habitually drank to excess. No knowledge of other chronic diseases.
Transmissions from the spacecraft to the Hornet back to Houston. Swim 1 is getting ready to deploy, Swimmer.
That's the Swim helicopter number 1 ready to deploy, Swimmers.
Childhood. You heard, disposition as child not known. Home circumstances very unhappy. A bitter divorce between our parents, 1934 onwards. Patient sided strongly with mother. Type of school, exclusive girls' private school, Albemarle at Wimbledon Common. The principal, a Miss Parrott, daughter of Sir something Parrott, then organist to the King of Windsor at Windsor. Any illness or injuries? The writer has known the patient to sleepwalk in Rome, 57 to 58. She also regularly wets her bed after drinking alcohol. She fell whilst in Rome and struck her head. The same occurred in Modena, see separate report. Occupation. No occupation of any kind. Her life is singularly empty, a fact of which she is conscious. She attends and occasionally gives parties and other social functions. She used to be much sought after in London and Roman society. She is of independent means, with alimony from ex-husband. Income is £2,000 per annum, less income tax. habits. She drinks gin, whiskey, cider, Italian and Spanish cheap wine to excess. Mixes her drinks. She states that she also takes Benzedrine in tablet form. The writer has not witnessed this. Also vermouth. A social life. Very sociable at parties, but lives a lonely life on her own in a Mews flat near Regent's Park. Has little interest in work of any kind. Is not interested in sports other than swimming and sunbathing, which she loves.
When the spacecraft impacts on the water, it doesn't come in slap, bottom down. That would be quite uncomfortable. It comes in on its toe, as they say, at an angle.
Treatment by Professore Nardoni in Rome. Nature of these not known. Present health. The patient eats practically nothing and lives on alcohol. In consequence, she has become excessively thin and is very sensitive to cold.
They are now hanging in their straps, looking down towards the water. And as we heard them say just now, it may be 7 or 8 minutes until they get this adjusted with the flotation bags inflating at the sharp end of the space.
First serious signs in September 57. See separate report by the writer on the period September 57 to January 58 in Rome, Italy. Alcoholism, violence, comatose condition, threats of suicide. 1959 to 60, continuation and worsening of above, but without further violence.
11.5 miles is our distance right now. Now,
the patient related occurrences which later proved unfounded.
And Chuck Smith here has mentioned this quite often, was 10 miles. Visibility was 10 miles.
When under the influence of alcohol, Benzedrine, and possibly other influences, the patient, who is normally fond of the writer, addresses her brother Morris as Germanic monster, Gestapo, hard, hard creature, inhuman, inhuman, and so forth. See also separate report, Rome 57 to 58, for her relationship with Porter in flats in Rome. See separate report 57 to 58 re ide fix concerning nationality of maternal grandfather Johannes Nakom. The patient also holds the unfounded opinion that all members of our father's side of the family, Seddons, are impossible and dreadful people and refuses to have anything whatever to do with them. This has been so ever since our parents divorced in 1935 to 6. The patient was deeply attached to our mother and loathed our father. She has often threatened to commit suicide, but the writer knows of no instance where she has actually attempted to injure herself. She has from time to time struck the writer in the following ways. A. Kicked. B. Struck in the face with fist flat of hand. C. Struck in face and on neck and shoulders with heavy dog lead for her Doberman pincher. In addition, she has from time to time struck her former Italian maid servant Mima Dal Bello, correct name Signora Domenica Dal Bello, via Eleonora Duse, number 2, Rome, Italy.
Don't tell me not to fly. I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it, but whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye. I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once, right, sir. Food life is juicy, juicy, and you see I'm gonna have my bite. Get ready for me, love, 'cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud of rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now.
What finally led to her going into hospital for observation? The patient was habitually very drunk and morose. These spells became increasingly frequent and serious. During the period 10 to 29 January 60, whilst the writer was in Germany on business, the patient telephoned a friend who had been invited to lunch, saying, "Don't come to lunch, I am going to..." And here it fades out. This was followed by a period of daily, long, drunken and morose spells, lasting most of the day.
A large, jolly, extrovert English girl, representing the tour operator running my holiday, gave a champagne party the first morning. Turning back the clock by, I nearly gave it away, by a number of years, let's put it like that, I could hear the old, old story. Be careful of the sun. Take it in small doses. Go easy on the drinks, particularly iced ones, at midday when it's very hot. The same faces nodded. The first timers, really intending to learn inwardly to jest and to practice what they were being told. The people who'd been before, ostentatiously yawning. Well, they knew it all already. Let's down the champagne, you could hear them thinking, and get into the pool or that little bar around the corner where a cubra libre is only 12 pesetas. Yet sadly, I reflected, by 3 days' time, in spite of good intentions or knowing it all, 50% of this small audience will either be badly sunburnt or suffering from an upset tummy. Unlike small children who, having once...
Frequently beginning at 0500, 0600 hours, the patient's brother and friends feared that she was not safe living in her flat alone in that condition. Frequently, she had been found in very dangerous circumstances whilst drunk. Do you know of any possible cause for her mental illness? Inherited tendencies see over. The patient's marriage, circa 1940, ended in separation, circa 1947-48, and divorce, circa 1953. She has had no children. A serious love affair with an Italian, Zingodi, ended in tragedy, July 1957. She has never had any lasting employment. She has no dependents and feels unwanted, wasted, and without achievement. National Health Insurance number, not known. The writer believes that the patient's NHS documentation is in need of checking and bringing up to date. As she lived approximately 1950 to 59 in Italy, where she did not need to maintain these documents, her payments doubtless need bringing up to date. Other observations. Additional doctors who have treated the patient in recent years, Dottore Carlo Angelotti, Interno 7-3, Piano, Vicino, Piazza Mazzina, Mazzina, Rome, Italy, telephone 361-484, Dottore Fume, Mental and Alcoholism, Via Rodolfo Lanciani 10, Interno 4, Vicino Via Nomentana, Rome, Italy, telephone 863-942. Dr. Fume works at large state-controlled mental hospital, but also owns and controls a private mental clinic, namely Villa Electra, 153 Via della Camilluccia, Monte Mario, Rome, Italy, telephone 340-581. Clinica per Malati Nervosi. Dr. Desmond McCarthy, 16 Edgerton Terrace, London, SW3. Telephone Kensington 4417. Additional information. Our grandfather, Henry Seddon, and his wife, our grandmother, were cousins. For further info on this point, please refer to Miss Nora Seddon, our father's sister, at the address given over leave. Amongst the many strange incidents involving the patient during her stay at Englefield Green in a flat on her own was that of Wednesday the 17th of June 1959, when she rang up the writer and stated that she had been raped in Windsor Great Park on the afternoon of that day. She was drunk at the time of her telephone call, which was recorded on tape by the writer. The tape has been carefully preserved, and together with many other tape recordings of her strange telephone calls and other remarkable utterances, presumably whilst under the influence, available for playback to the doctors and or the patient at any time at which they may be needed. A witness to her allegations concerning the happenings of that day is Major Sasha Rubin, 63 Cornwall Gardens, London. Telephone WES 7640, office at Air Ministry. Telephone TRA 8811, Whitehall SW1. Telephone PRO 7359 and 7136. Also at flat 13, third floor, 169 Queensgate, SW7. Telephone Kensington 54, ? Major R called by appointment to take the patient out to dinner at the Hindshead Hotel at Bray and found her very drunk, somewhat bruised, elbows and knees, and alleging that she had been raped. The matter was reported to the CID at Windsor. Detective Constables Mott and Court handled the affair. They were unable to establish anything concrete, but doubted the veracity of her story, as does the writer, and as do many of her closest friends, to whom she related it.
What are you looking so pleased about?
I am looking so pleased because tonight is the annual share-out of the Hand and Racket Slate Club.
The writer has frequently witnessed the patient drive her car whilst under the influence, and on several occasions this has nearly led to serious accidents. On at least one occasion, at Cesena in North Italy, an accident did in fact result. At Cesena, winter 1957, the patient stopped her car whilst en route from Munich to Rome in order to have an alcoholic drink at a wayside bar. The writer was her passenger and shared the driving with her. On leaving the bar, the patient insisted on driving herself, and within a few yards of setting off, her car came into a collision with an Italian woman cyclist who was knocked off her bicycle and was taken by us in the car to a local hospital for treatment of a slight head wound.
When she was by my side, seems you just went flying by. Oh, time, you're not a friend of mine. It was you who took away the happiness of yesterday. Oh, time, you're not a friend of mine. She's gone, we've loved our last. It seems as though you'll never pass. Oh, time, you're not a friend of mine. But if you could bring her back to me, or take her from my memory, then time, you'd be a friend of mine.
Later, a claim was made which was dealt with by the insurance company. The patient insists, both when sober and when drunk, that her driving skill was improved by alcohol. The writer has frequently prevented the patient from driving when drunk by confiscating the ignition key to her car. This invariably infuriates the patient, who is liable on these occasions to become violent and to threaten the writer.
My memory than time, you'd be a friend of mine. Time, you'd be a friend of mine.
To weep. Very large national insurance stamps.
That's the end of the hospital report. The following is a letter written by Morris to his sister Cecilia, dated Tuesday the 29th of October 1958, written from Datchet Cottage, Datchet, Buckinghamshire. My dear Cecilia, you must excuse my typing this letter. I badly need practice for business purposes, so I am seizing every opportunity. thank you for your letters of 1. Begun Saturday, finished Monday, and 2. Friday, October the 24th. Tufnell telephoned me, Thingamy Brown, yesterday, and said in a rather upset tone of voice that the owner of one of the houses, I believe it was the Raisbury Cottage, had told them that you had been writing direct to her offering 5 guineas.
When I was a little boy, down on an old country farm.
And wanting to know what was going on, she has apparently agreed to either 7 or 7.5 guineas, I forget which. Brown asked for your address so that he could inform you direct, so I gave it to him. I have not been to see the Bray house, as I considered it premature, in view of the complete uncertainty of your future plans. Please do not thank me. Heaven knows the circumstances of your stay were frugal and Spartan indeed, by comparison with those to which you are accustomed. I am only sorry that I could not do better on my very limited scale of living, which is all that my income allows me. I was sorry to read of your rough flight, but thankful to heaven that you were not in that other Viscount, which only a few days later was involved in that terrible fatal collision with the Italian Air Force plane over Italy. I have at length prevailed, I believe, on Mrs. Hards to allow me to have a very modest semi-cooking installation erected in the box room, which would then serve as a dining room come kitchenette combined, very primitive but inexpensive and just adequate. It would also serve as a box room. I am having an estimate prepared at this very moment. I have given considerable thought to the question of sharing a house with you. This question has repeatedly worried me and occupied my mind ever since you returned to Italy a week or two or three ago. I have been reminded again and again vividly of the innumerable terrible incidents which I was compelled to witness and suffer under during my stay in your flat in Rome during September 57 to January 58, when you were perpetually drunk and hysterical and frequently dangerously violent. Although you assure me that you have subsequently completely given up this intolerable mode of living, which you will remember was so insupportable that in the end it drove me to run away from you in spite of your repeated entreaties to remain. And although I have seen no further examples of this malady during either of your two recent short visits to England, you must nevertheless understand that it is difficult in the extreme for me, or anyone else knowing the circumstance, to believe that in so short a time you should have been able to conquer completely so deep and absorbing an addiction. Thus, I am inclined to think that although you might well make a good beginning, you would in all probability revert to your former mode of life after a very short time had elapsed. This would be quite fatal to my work and business.
No, I don't want to hear it. I'm hungry.
My second worry is on the score of money. You and I have never agreed on money matters and on methods of treating creditors. I do not suppose that we shall ever agree. I can clearly foresee that if we shared a joint household, you would in your usual way incur credit everywhere, and it would fall to me, in order to maintain my business reputation to pay off your bad debts. I'm sorry Bob could not afford them. Luciano evidently likewise, and the same goes for me. The risk to my business, knowing your financial past as I do, would be far too great. You have your own income of £2,000 less tax per annum, a figure which many people would be very glad of. At present I have only a meagre £10 per week, £520 less tax per annum. And my company is at present running at a trading loss. We are struggling to make ends meet. No, it is high time that you adjusted your scale of living to fit your income, which with a little thrift would be very adequate. I am not in a position to subsidise your finances in any way whatever, and I am not prepared to do so. I regret, therefore, I must state definitely that I have decided that I am not willing to share a house or flat with you. Please, therefore, make your own arrangements independently of me. It is clear to me, quite apart from any other consideration, that your temperament and way of life and mine do not harmonise, and that whilst one another's company is a source of joy during short periods, it becomes a source of very severe irritation and mutual friction during long periods. This being the case, we should face it as a fact and keep our periods of meeting short and occasional, thereby enabling us both to enjoy to the full all that is best in the other's company. I would, on the whole, advise you to find yourself an alternative and much cheaper flat in or near Rome, thereby saving yourself the terrific expense of moving to England. Alternatively, if you have really decided to return to England, then I should advise you to take a room or PG with friends in London, if a flat is too expensive for you. In London, you would be in your element, with all your society friends and social activities and parties around you. In Datchet, you would feel cut off from your world, a fish out of water. In any case, if you come to England, I cannot advise you too strongly to leave both of your dogs in Italy. It is quite mad of you, with all your debts and money troubles, to pay out £165 on quarantine expenses for 6 months in order to bring two dogs into England. Also, to leave your maid Mima in Italy, it is equally mad to bring a maid servant, which is an expensive luxury which none but the rich can afford in England today in your financial state. Many thanks for taking the pickup to Edmundo, who has confirmed safe receipt. I visited the garden cottage at Langley. It is not to let or for sale. Thank you for sending the photos. I will return them. They only represent a small fraction of the total number of those I took. Where are all the many others? Those of the Bentley and the Rolls-Royce together, for instance. Please ask Dodo to return all the negatives to me. The address of North Lodge is North Lodge, Richmead, Englefield Green. I forwarded the letter you enclosed in yours to me. I am sorry to learn of yet another illness. Either your worry or the Roman climate seems to disagree with you. I am afraid that it is most unlikely that I shall be free to go away anywhere at Christmas, as I understand that it is the busiest time of the year in the radio trade, when everybody buys new radio and TV receivers. Let's hope they come to buy from Audiorama Limited. Certainly we need a big sales boost. Your car, it sounds to me as though the petrol tank is quite simply full, though it may be otherwise. As to the queer scraping sound underneath, I am afraid that at this distance it is quite impossible to diagnose the fault. You should not drive it any further. It may easily be a dangerous defect, which could cause an accident. Take it to a competent garage at once for immediate examination and repair. Certainly you should under no circumstances undertake the journey to England in that car until you have had it thoroughly examined and put into a safe and roadworthy state for so long a journey. In view of the winter conditions in the mountains, you must have anti-congelant shell, antifreeze, put into your radiator before leaving. Otherwise your engine will freeze and crack the cylinder block, thereby destroying your engine on the way. This would bring your journey to a very full stop in a cloud of steam. I doubt that you are burning oil and therefore running on three cylinders, although this may be the case. I would think it rather more likely that your valves are burned and pitted, and that in consequence you are losing compression. This would result in misfiring and lack of power. Take it to a competent garage and have it examined and put right properly and fully. It is quite impossible to diagnose the faults without actually seeing and testing the car. Much as I should like to help, I really do not feel that I can spare either the time or the money to fly to Italy in order to accompany you on the car journey back to England. We are on the brink of acquiring shop premises, and I shall need every penny and every minute for the new venture. I'm sorry if some of the contents of this letter distresses you. This is inevitable under the circumstances, but it is better for all parties to be frank about these things from the start, as we then know exactly how we stand. I have got to work damned hard for my living, and I am prepared to live frugally and within the limits of my very small income in order to make a modest success of the venture. You, on the other hand, have been used to live on the grand scale, at a level well beyond your income. Though this income has been many times mine, our two ways of life would never mix, and you would constantly demand my time and attention for your affairs and parties, which would constitute a severe damage, nay, a complete disruption and ruination of my business. No, I regret, it would not work. It is a pity, because if only it could work, it would be a mutual blessing and help. Under the circumstances, I am forced to repeat that I am not willing to share a house or flat with you. You have my best wishes and prayers to help you through your troubles and financial difficulties in the removal from your Rome flat. May God guide you and help you. Try hard not to worry. This only makes everything much worse, and cut out the alcohol. This would only make you permanently ill and quite incapable of tackling the many tough problems which lie before you. You are often in my thoughts. Much love, Morris.
They weren't a bit deaf, but I think they're all right now. Maybe finish out with a song that's one of the best known, and until tonight, one of the best loved. Serious songs by old Fred Lehar, unfortunately. Cannot be with us tonight, he's broken his meerschaum. Anyway, here it is.
You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And next week I will be broadcasting from the Science Museum at a different time, starting at 3:30, between 3:30 and 4:30. The last 2 weeks have been correspondence by Captain Frank Morris Henry Nacom Urquhart Seddon, Royal Signals, retired, concerning his sister Cecilia Foley. And at Morris's funeral in March of this year, I met for the first time Professor Walter Heyman, who is Professor of Mathematics at Imperial College, which happens to be next door to the Science Museum, by complete coincidence. And Professor Heyman will be my guest next week at the Science Museum, and we will probably talk about briefly about Morris and their time at Gordonstone. They both went to Gordonstone School, and possibly mathematics and perpetual motion machines. Thank you for listening.
stick with the microphone under the windlight. Under the windlight. One, two, three. Testing handheld close speech on the GDM whatever, Grundig microphone. One, two, three. From another world. Testing on distance speech on the right-hand channel. About to unplug. Testing at on the TK145, channel 3, stroke 4. Changing over. Once more on 3-4. And now bringing the microphone close to a distance of about 6 inches from the mouth on 3-4. And now testing once more on the microphone on channel 3-4 on the TK145.